Welcome to this special report update on the situation with Israel, Iran, the Middle East, Hezbollah, Lebanon, you know, the whole deal. I'm Mike Adams. Thank you for joining me today. Now, I know that everybody gets all emotional when it comes to talking about Israel or anything related to the Middle East. So I'm not going to invoke that. This is a top-down strategic theater of war analysis of what has just happened and what the implications might be. And yes, that was a reference to Idiocracy right there with President Camacho. So the notable events that have just occurred in the last several days, Israel has used a drone strike to assassinate, I believe, two different Hamas leaders, plus some other surrounding personnel, inside of Lebanon. This is designed to absolutely enrage Hezbollah and Nasrallah, who is at the moment trying desperately to keep his troops under control because they're completely outraged and they want to just, you know, bomb Israel right now if they can, or launch missiles. Nasrallah is trying to sort of keep them in line. And we'll get back to that in a second. There was also this huge bombing of this remembrance event in Iran that was remembering Soleimani, who was assassinated by a U.S. drone strike back in, I believe, 2020 under President Trump. And Soleimani was one of the key Iranian military logistics experts who had a big role in sort of readying Hamas for its current war with Israel. Soleimani is the guy who taught Hamas a lot of the things that it has currently achieved, including many techniques of building tunnels, but mostly logistics for weapons supplies and so on. So Trump takes out Soleimani years ago. There's a remembrance event for him. And then there's, well, multiple explosions. The current reports say there were four bombs. I had initially read there were two bombs, but apparently that's four if I'm reading it correctly. Whatever the case, however many bombs it was more than one, and they bombed civilians who were just gathered at the memorial, essentially. And initially, the death reports were over 100. Then I saw a number recently that said there were 70 that died, so it's not clear, but it's a lot of people. It's, let's say, around 100. Now, at first, when that happened, almost everybody in the Middle East blamed Israel. They said this is a Mossad bombing because it's classic Mossad type of behavior to try to provoke Iran into a counterattack against maybe U.S. or Israeli military assets. And it was believed, and I believed it too, that this was designed to pull the United States into a war with Iran. But in the hours since, ISIS has publicly claimed responsibility for that bombing. And I'm not sure what to make of it. You know, trying to sort out what's happening in the Middle East is always a nightmare. And you don't even know if ISIS actually did the bombing or if they just want to take credit for it. You know, maybe Mossad did the bombing, but Mossad doesn't want the credit for it. And ISIS says, well, we'll take the credit. You know, it's always difficult to know who's lying, because usually when it comes to violence in the Middle East, usually everybody's lying. But the upshot of this is that Iran, well, the people of Iran are absolutely outraged, and, you know, justifiably so, for this mass slaughter of innocent people who were just gathered at a memorial. And this is escalating the calls for war. And so what you're actually seeing right now is the officials of Iran and also Hezbollah, and to some extent Turkey as well, all of these officials desperately trying to hold back their armies, their people, their militias, or in the case of Iran, the IRGC, trying to hold back these people and to try to not give the West what the West wants, which in the case of Israel, Israel wants to be attacked in a major way by Iran or Hezbollah so that the U.S. is compelled to get swept into a greater war in the Middle East, because Israel wants the U.S. to do its fighting for it. You know, Israel by itself is not a very powerful military force in the Middle East. Let's be honest. They don't have a lot of soldiers. The soldiers they do have, especially the reservists, are not that impressive. The one thing they do have is nukes. Everybody knows they have nukes, and frankly, if they didn't have nukes, Israel would have already been overrun at this point. No question about it. It's the nukes that are the deterrent. And Nasrallah knows this in Lebanon. He knows that if Hezbollah were to do a full-scale assault on Israel, which they are capable of doing, that Israel would nuke Beirut and other areas, probably, of Lebanon. And a similar story with Iran. Of course, Iran wants to destroy Israel, but Israel would nuke major cities in Iran. And so that is functioning as a deterrent. But under the cover of that, Israel is provoking an escalation of conflict with all these other countries. And ultimately, that provocation is probably going to stir up some things in Turkey, because, you know, Turkey is like 96% Muslim, maybe 98%. And Turkey, even though it's a NATO member, you know, eventually even Erdogan can't hold back the wave of anger from his own people. Now, here's something else you need to know. I was told from a source from Lebanon that Hezbollah does not want to engage Israel yet. That Hezbollah is actually building up its missiles, its military. You know, Hezbollah receives a lot of funding, some of it from Iran, perhaps most of it. Some of it, you know, from Qatar. I'm not sure exactly where all its funding sources are. But Hezbollah needs a couple more years in order to really build up its weapons base. And once it has that, it plans to attack Israel and to even just destroy Israel. And Hezbollah also has tunnels, an extensive tunnel network that goes underneath the border, you know, southern Lebanon border, northern Israel border. That tunnel network will be used as part of the eventual invasion or attack on Israel from Hezbollah. So the tunnels aren't just in Gaza, and it doesn't involve just Hamas. And remember that Hamas and Hezbollah don't necessarily get along. And in fact, Hamas, by attacking Israel on October 7th, which was also a provoked attack, Hamas kind of screwed up Hezbollah's timeline. Hezbollah didn't want to be engaging with Israel yet. They wanted more time, but they're kind of forced into this situation at the moment prematurely before they're fully ready to wage full-scale war with Israel. Now, all these Arab countries, and even Persia, Iran, they all say to themselves, and they all know that Israel, and this is from their point of view, that Israel has got to go. That Israel cannot be allowed to continue to exist in the Middle East because Israel is incompatible with peace in the entire region. So they all, in their minds, they have a plan to completely obliterate Israel. Iran, for example, you know, former, you know, Ayatollahs and so on have talked about nuking Israel. That as soon as Iran gets nuclear weapons, they're going to nuke Tel Aviv and wipe Israel off the map. There have been repeated threats of that. And of course, Hezbollah, which does not have nukes, not that we know of, not at the moment, they plan to overrun Israel through conventional means, you know, rockets and missiles and men and anti-tank weapons and things like that. But Israel depends on the U.S. Navy in particular to come to its defense. Israel cannot defend itself against these other Arab nations and Iran, because the advancement of weapons technology has been so rapid in places like Iran and also in Turkey, which is actually building its own, you know, fifth-generation fighter, that these weapon systems are now eclipsing the weapons of the West. So 20 years ago, the United States and Israel had a really strong advantage on weapon systems and, you know, naval presence and so on. Today, that's not the case. Today, the balance of weapon superiority is no longer strongly in the West's favor. But one of the things we all witnessed during the war in Ukraine is that the West no longer has the military dominance that it once possessed. In other words, you know, the U.S. was just defeated by Russia in Ukraine. I mean, there were U.S. personnel, U.S. weapon systems like HIMARS and so on, U.S. satellites, U.S. intelligence, U.S. analysis, U.S. training, U.S. targeting systems, you know, U.S. satellite imagery, whatever. And it wasn't enough. And there were German tanks, you know, the Leopards. And by the way, all the Leopards have been destroyed. They're damaged or destroyed, in other words. So, you know, the very best weapon systems of the West are no longer enough to, you know, to have dominance over the battlefield. And the Middle Eastern nations have no doubt taken note of this very important dynamic. They realize this. They know what's happening. They know that the West can now be defeated in ways that were not possible 20 years ago, or certainly 30 years ago during Desert Storm. The U.S. Navy in particular is a lot more vulnerable today because of anti-ship missile systems. And those missile systems are possessed by Hezbollah, by the way, as well as, of course, Iran. But even Hezbollah can take out U.S. naval ships. And my prediction is that the next escalation you're going to see in this war, and very likely, by the way, this might be the intention of the United States, is to put out a bunch of naval vessels as bait, hoping for one of them to be severely damaged or even sunk, so that the U.S. can then declare a much wider war and can get public support for, you know, bombing Iran, for example. And so Iran's game in this, its leaders have no doubt figured this out. The only way they win is to not respond to the provocations, to not escalate, to not attack naval ships, and instead to allow the passage of time to continue to weaken America, which is exactly what's happening, especially in terms of the dollar, you know, global de-dollarization, the rise of BRICS nations, and the collapsing U.S. currency. So, you know, in 6 months, most of the world will be trading in non-dollar denominated currencies. That dynamic is already well underway with BRICS nations or BRICS plus nations, including the Saudis at this point. And the U.S. is just losing dollar dominance. At the same time, the U.S. is falling further and further behind in military technology because there's so much corruption in the military-industrial complex in the United States, so much incompetence, so much wokeism, that the U.S., as a nation, is now incapable of innovating effective new weapon systems. It's just incapable. Can't build hypersonic missiles that work, you know, can't build new aircraft carriers that function worth a damn. I mean, the USS Ford is plagued with problems. I mean, the elevators didn't work for 6 months on that thing. You know, cost overruns galore, and not to mention, you know, the F-35, which is basically just a flying electronic countermeasure target that can be brought out of the sky at any moment by Russian electronic warfare, by the way. And that's when the F-35 is even able to fly and when it can even get spare parts. The bottom line is, time will defeat the U.S. empire while all the other nations of the world become more technologically advanced and more economically capable. I mean, Russia's economy is stronger than ever. China is building up a massive navy. Iran continues to innovate weapon systems. Turkey is innovating a lot more very high-tech weapon systems. And by the way, you know, autonomous drones that are just light years more advanced than anything the U.S. has ever come up with. And Iran is building drones as well. So the U.S. and Israel are trying to circumvent the passage of time by bombing or provoking or false flagging nations like Iran and Lebanon. Whereas the leaders of Hezbollah or the leaders of Turkey or the leaders of Iran, they have to try to not be provoked into this escalation. And that's the dynamic. So you're going to see more Israeli attacks. Now, maybe ISIS did this most recent bombing in Iran, but you're going to see Mossad carry out a lot more sabotage. You're going to see the U.S. attempt to provoke. You're going to see drone strikes against more Hezbollah leaders and Hamas leaders and potentially, you know, Iranian leaders. You're going to see Mossad assassinations of Iranian scientists and physicists, probably, and industry leaders and politicians and so on. This is all part of the provocation pattern. Now, with that said, should the provocations succeed, and should the entire Middle Eastern region erupt into more war, should Iran be swept up into it, which let's hope that doesn't happen. But if it does happen, the implications for the United States are quite severe. First of all, some significant portion of the world's energy exports make their way through the Strait of Hormuz. The Strait of Hormuz is located right there, kind of like the southwestern portion of Iran. And Iran, of course, has complete control over the Strait of Hormuz. Iran could deny any ship a passage through that strait. And what that means is that at its choice, Iran can shut down both liquid natural gas exports and oil exports to both Europe and the United States or anywhere it wants. So what you're seeing with the Houthis in the Red Sea right now, which is the targeting of cargo vessels for drone strikes and some sort of simple low-tech rocket strikes, you could see that in spades if Iran decides to essentially blockade the Strait of Hormuz and block the shipment of energy out of that region. Now, that would, of course, anger very much many of the other nations there, the other Arab nations. You know, the Saudis wouldn't want to go along with that, and Qatar probably wouldn't either, and Iraq probably, I would imagine, isn't on board with that, and Kuwait, and so on. So, you know, the conflict gets very, very complex, but Iran does have the capability of blocking off the Strait of Hormuz or harassing transport vessels, thereby disrupting the world's energy supply. So one of the things that we should all anticipate in the United States and Western Europe, wherever you're listening, we should anticipate energy supply chain shortages and significant price increases in energy prices. Now that will, of course, have a devastating impact on Western economies. So as energy prices go up, then of course, you know, food prices go up, transport prices go up, consumer goods, all of it, everything becomes more expensive. This will lead to more inflation. So a lot more people will notice that it's costing a lot more money to buy food and so on, even way beyond what it currently is. And you might say, you might realize that, hey, this is going to be bad for Biden's reelection. And indeed, it would be. And that's why there is an element inside the Biden administration that does not want war in the Middle East. That element is currently fighting with the pro-war element, you know, the John Boltons and so on, the Lindsey Grahams, some of the neocons and so on, who want war at any cost, no matter what. So you could even say there's kind of a civil war inside the Biden administration about whether to go to war with Iran. And you hear the voices like, you know, Lindsey Graham saying it's time to bomb Iran. And he's singing the songs and everything. Whereas a lot of other people are like, no, you know, pull out of the Middle East because we're losing the Muslim vote, which is exactly what's happening. The Democrats have lost the Muslim vote because of the support for Israel's bombing of Gaza. Right? So again, this gets very, very complex. Now, the money is in war. The money is in war. I mean, the military-industrial complex makes so much money, and they have bribes and payoffs and kickbacks and, oh, we're going to fund your child's, you know, think tank, whatever. They do that to all the senators. So there's a lot of money in war. So if we go into a war, yeah, you know, thousands of Americans will die probably, but you think Lindsey Graham gives a crap about that? No, of course not. These senators are going to make a lot of money. because war bankrolls, you know, the military-industrial complex. So if we go to war, that bankrolling will be contingent upon more money printing. That's right. Trillions of dollars in new money will have to be printed in order to fund that war. And that money printing will cause more inflation or dollar devaluation, and it will only accelerate the rest of the world moving away from the dollar and choosing BRICS currencies. So the faster the U.S. provokes war and goes to war, the faster the dollar gets abandoned by the rest of the world. And the bottom line translation of this is that the U.S. dollar will be the casualty of the escalation of war in the Middle East. And as the U.S. dollar becomes more and more of a casualty, it means gold and silver will skyrocket, probably in price, denominated in dollars, because the dollar is getting weaker. So the bottom line here, gold and silver will probably fall if there's peace in the Middle East. Gold and silver will probably rise if there's war in the Middle East. Energy will get a lot more expensive if there's an escalation of war in the Middle East. And there are very powerful elements inside the United States government, including the State Department, that are pushing aggressively for more war in the Middle East, plus the entire military-industrial complex and the entire woke military leadership, which is incompetent, but, you know, they want war so they can be more important. So right now, if I were to have to bet on this, I would bet that the war provocateurs are going to succeed. They're going to get the war they want. And we're going to be thrust into a major escalation of war in the Middle East, which eventually will involve Russia. Russia will be forced to respond to defend Iran and perhaps China, but most definitely Russia, because Russia is, you know, not far away, right there. And Russia has many, many interests, you know, trade interests and so on, and strategic interests with Iran and energy interests. So this will pull Russia into the war, and Russia will probably end up using, you know, Kinzhal hypersonic missiles to sink U.S. naval vessels, and then it's on. And then who knows at what point nukes start to fly. So we need to be prepared for this. We need to be prepared for the rapid collapse of the dollar, the rapid hiking of energy prices, and also the rapid escalation of war in the region. So some of the things that we can look at, of course, gold and silver. If you want gold and silver coins, my sponsor in that space is the Treasure Island Coins and Precious Metals Company. You can reach them at metalswithmike.com. I do not earn a percentage on those purchases, and they have very good pricing. If you also want to look at goldbacks, these are the divisible, beautiful bills with gold embedded in the bills. And my affiliate website on that, where I do earn a small commission at no cost to you, is verifiedgoldbacks.com. Even though you already have gold and silver, probably, I think it's a good idea to have goldbacks on hand, because goldbacks are instantly divisible and usable at very small denominations. You know, even in a grid down situation, even in a cyber attack, even if the banking system fails, you can take out goldbacks and you can use them to purchase everyday things, because they're such small, precise denominations. So that's something to consider. Also, don't forget about your backup satellite communications. Our sponsor is the Satellite Phone Store, SAT123.com. You know, check your food supplies, check your medical supplies, check your backup antibiotics, you know, make sure you're squared away on all these areas. Make sure you've got comms, make sure you have, you know, garden seeds and everything that you need to be prepared for more chaos, because that's probably the direction in which this is headed. So thank you for listening. Mike Adams here, naturalnews.com and brighteon.com. Take care. Today's program is brought to you by Goldbacks, and you can go to my website, verifiedgoldbacks.com, in order to see all our lab testing results of these really innovative bills that have physical gold embedded in them. I've got a little stack of them in my hands here. These are the one goldbacks. Each of these contains quite literally 1/1000th of a troy ounce of gold inside the bill. The gold is actually in there. And there are other denominations, fives, tens, 25s, and 50s. The 50, of course, contains 50 1/1000ths of an ounce of gold. And I didn't even believe that at first. And so I acquired a bunch of these and I did the testing. If you go to my website, verifiedgoldbacks.com, you can see the laboratory testing that we did. And here I am, I bought a kiln, I did the meltdowns. We use acid also, you know, nitric acid here, did a dissolving into a mass spec analysis in my laboratory. Here's some of the melted gold that came out of the kiln test, and here's some of the weights and so on. On this website, you can see, let me scroll down, you can see the actual recoveries. There's some of the gold foil that comes out in the first melting. There's the picture of the kiln. And there's some, well, different photos of the dust and everything that comes out. Bottom line is in this chart right here. The recovery that we got, the amount of gold that we got out of these bills, it was over 100% of the claimed amount in every single case. The lowest we got was 102%. The highest we got was 107%. And then we did ICP-MS testing here. And these are the results we got showing that it is better than 99.99% atomic gold, which makes it better than 24 karat gold. So, bottom line, not only are the gold backs real, not only do they contain the gold that they claim to contain, and it's pure gold or, you know, 24 karat plus in purity, but they're highly divisible. So I can take these and I can, you know, I can give somebody or I can pay for something with 1/1000th of an ounce of gold, which I can't do that with a coin. Like here I have silver coins, but I can't take like a pair of scissors and cut off 1/1000th of an ounce of silver or gold. It just doesn't work that way. And I would ruin the coin. So gold backs make gold really usable, divisible, and it works in an off-grid situation. Power grid goes down, you may not have access to your crypto. You certainly won't have access to your bank account in that grid down scenario. These work. These work, and the gold is instantly visible. Gold backs are becoming increasingly recognizable, and people love the way they look, and they love to hold on to these, and more people are willing to take them, even as merchants, for purchases. So go to verifiedgoldbacks.com to learn about these. This is an affiliate site. We do earn a small commission on the sales of these at no additional cost to you. So it does help support this platform, but you'll get these in your hands. Now you might ask, well, what's the price of these compared to the price of actual gold? Okay, it is cheaper to buy raw gold by itself per ounce if you just want a gold coin or a gold bar. This has a premium over the price of gold, because of the format and the divisibility and the precision and the printing technology and all of that. But it also means these have value over gold as they are accepted and recognized by merchants. So if you just want raw gold, you know, get gold coins. But how are you gonna divide them up? How are you gonna really use them in day-to-day transactions? If you want usable gold, gold backs are a great solution for that. And I think these can be part of every person's preparedness. If you already have gold and silver, maybe you already have garden seeds, maybe you already have other assets, but do you have gold backs yet? This is something important to add. And they also make really incredible, highly educational gifts. I've been tipping waiters and waitresses at restaurants with this, and then I have a little conversation with them about real money. Like, this is real gold, you know, versus fiat currency. And you can give them as gifts to family members, you know, birthdays and holidays and whatever else. And you can teach children or grandchildren about what is real money. And they will hold on to these because the artwork is amazing. They're beautiful. People will hold on to these and they'll see the value rise as the value of gold rises because these contain physical gold. As gold goes up, gold backs go up versus the dollar that's going down. And who knows in how many years, you know, what these will be worth versus the increasingly collapsing dollar. So I don't encourage speculation, just to be clear. I'm not saying speculate in it, but just to hold on to value that you have right now, just to kind of freeze, you know, your savings. I don't trust that the dollar is going to be here 10 years down the road. I know the dollar is not going to hold its own value, but I have absolute certainty that gold is going to continue to hold value. And as dollars drop, that means the price of gold in dollars will be rising, even if gold itself is still worth the same in terms of purchasing power. But in dollar denominations, gold will appear to be going up in terms of dollars. So that's something to keep in mind. Now, do your own research. I'm not your financial advisor, obviously. Do your own research, get your own experts, do what's right for you. Only you know your financial situation and your risk and so on. And could these go down in value? Well, if gold goes down, these will go down in value. If you think gold's going to go down over the next 10 years, then, you know, maybe you can buy Apple stock or something. I don't know. But if you think gold's going to go up or hold its own, then this is a great way to have physical gold in a usable form. So check it out at verifiedgoldbacks.com. And thank you for supporting us also. But more importantly, you know, thank you for protecting your own assets. We're going into some very interesting times in the years ahead. Thanks for watching. I'm Mike Adams for Brighteon.com. Take care.